Every counterculture begins in a particular place and time, even if it doesn't always stay there. The focus of this book is the U.S. counterculture. America was founded in the ideology, and I stress the term ideology because it was never real to begin with, of a new world, a fresh start, even if it was explicitly contradicted from the start. Slavery, racism, genocide, sexism, homophobia, classism, empire, war-making. For this reason, America has attracted more than its fair share of dissenters. One might think that there are many accounts of the U.S. counterculture. There aren't. Most histories of the U.S. counterculture are as narrow in their scope as they are tired in their claims. Part of this has to do with how the term itself came to be defined. The term counterculture was first popularized by the historian Theodore Roszak in his seminal 1969 book, The Making of a Counterculture, Reflections on the Technocratic Society and Its Youthful Opposition. Roszak took the youth movements of the 1960s as the preeminent example of U.S. counterculture. 100,000 hippies in tie-dye shirts, dancing to the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury neighborhood during the Summer of Love in 1967, saying things like, "Far out!" and "Groovy!" College kids in coffee shops reading Jack Kerouac's On the Road. Hipsters tripping on LSD and reciting sections of William Burroughs' Naked Lunch with Bob Dylan blasting in the background. These kids partied hard and died young. Eventually, they packed their bags up in the Haight-Ashbury. By the late 1970s, they sold out their radical lifestyles to become upstanding middle-class men and women. By the 1980s, they became stockbrokers, advertising executives, and corporate suits. This story is far too simplistic. Yet, the hippies in the 1960s were one major counterculture in America, but they weren't the only one. Among the major U.S. countercultures, there were also the New England Transcendentalists, Utopian Socialists, and New York Bohemians in the 19th century. There were the anarchists and village bohemians of the 1910s. There was the Harlem Renaissance in the 1930s and the Beat Generation of the 1950s. There was also the black arts movement in the 1970s and black feminism and hip-hop in the 1980s. Telling the story of U.S. counterculture in this way, to encompass its breadth and scope, overturns a major misconception that U.S. counterculture has been white and middle class. The counterculture has always been diverse, multicultural, and multiracial, and it's been a direct product of these encounters. Without village bohemians in the 1910s, you wouldn't have the Harlem Renaissance. Without the Harlem Renaissance, it's hard to speak of the Beats. Hip-hop makes no sense without 19th-century transcendentalism. The black arts movement inspires graffiti culture. Once we appreciate the U.S. counterculture in its complexity, we can better appreciate why it mattered, what it meant, and what lessons we might learn from it today.